Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
This episode of the Wizen Cricket Weekly podcast is brought to you by Charles Tirrett, pros in effortless menswear, whether you need a casual weekend look or sharp tailoring. For the month of June, we're offering our listeners 20% off with code WISDENPOD. That's WISDENPOD. Use online or simply quote in store. Right then, that was Baz Ball. England came into this series against the World Test Champions with 1 win in 17. With their captain, head coach and managing director all recently gone. They were 69-4 chasing nearly 300 Lords and they won. They needed 160 runs in the final session at Trent Bridge and they won. And they were 55-6 in response to 330 at Headingley and Johnny Bairstow and a garden debut put on 200. And the most amazing thing with that is no one was even really that shocked. Phil, try and make sense of what we've just witnessed.
Well, there is some kind of method in the madness because the results speak for themselves, but there's something over and above results taking place, and that's the most intriguing thing for me, that this is some kind of philosophy that's evolving here before our eyes. And it's extraordinary how quickly it's happened, how little pushback there's been, and how utterly unhingingly thrilling it's been to watch. And there is no there is no equivocation with it. This is what's so amazing about it. Last night, we're speaking, by the way, from Headingley, an hour or so after the game has finished, and it has that slightly kind of melancholy feel that you get with an empty cricket ground as the show rolls on. But we're still trying to decompress from this week, I suppose. And the thing, there's a number of sort of motifs from this week and indeed the last 3 weeks. But last night in the dressing room, Ben Stokes, England captain, which even in itself still sounds novel, but we best get used to it and get used to it quick. Ben Stokes, England captain, said to his players last night, because they needed 296 to win with about 40 overs left in the day, he said to them, "That's about sevens. Let's go and get it. Let's go and get it tonight." This is on a wearing pitch, with a bit of cloud around, with two of the great new ball bowlers of the 21st century, desperate, playing desperate cricket to try and salvage something from the wreckage of a peculiar tour for them. And Stokes said to his boys, "Sevens, seven and a bit, we can do that. Get it done, lads. Let's get it done tonight." And people looked around, apparently, slightly bemused and bewildered and smiling, and then looked back at their captain and realised that he was deadly serious. And they had to gently talk him off the ledge of that idea. Because there has to be some kind of balance, right? Some kind of tiny amount of pragmatism injected into this wondrous idea. But it's a tiny little droplet. It's no more than that. And when McCullum was asked in the press conference this evening, He said that he wants to know where the line is, but he doesn't want to find out yet. He wants to go too far. He wants to push so far and go too far, take it well beyond the bounds of reasonable, balanced behaviour, because only then, once they've failed, Will they know where the line is? As it stands, it's just endless possibilities. It obviously has echoes of the Owen Morgan era, that notion of running to the fire because you need to know how far you can go before you get too burnt. It has that element to it, that air of it. And look, it's just wondrously funny. And another example, I know you're desperate to get in here, but another little example is that we've kind of been encouraged to talk about Jos Buttler coming into the side as a test match opener. And it's being talked about among grown-ups. Kumar Sangakkara, the great Kumar Sangakkara, saying it on British TV. Yeah, get Jos in. Get him into open. And naturally, because we are conditioned, the punters out on social media and watching in the bleachers and so on, you know, that they spit their cornflakes out of that notion. Because it flies in the face of all rational thought. But we're going to have to get used to this, folks. We really are. And we're going to have to allow ourselves a little poetry, okay? A little lyricism in this otherwise very prose-heavy game of ours. Because that is what they're trying to do. That this is the narrative that they're trying to weave. And we're going to have to get on with it. There is a marvellously altruistic, open-hearted feel to it as well, which I like. That it's not reduced to simple win, lose, draw. What result have we got? How many points have we got in the Test Match Championship? There is something higher at play here. The fight for the soul of Test cricket, I know I'm going on, but the fight for the soul of Test cricket is a dance that we've all taken for years. Decades, even centuries. Well, now we have these two punks right at the tip of conservative old cricket in this particular country who are saying the game can be more than you could have ever dreamt of it. And if we can't get a little bit juiced up about that, then we should seriously find something else to get excited about.
Thank you for listening to the Wizarding Cricket Weekly podcast. I agree with loads of that. Well, everything you said. And there's so much stuff that happens when you think back over this series. And by the end, stuff that would have been absolutely incredible. Because obviously the Bairstow-Overton partnership was still ridiculous. You could still recognise that at the time. But then you have like today with like that Bairstow innings, like cricketing logic and reason dictates, that when you're chasing only 300 and, it always gets a bit touchy towards the end. So when you still need more than 100, and, one of the set batters gets out early on the final day, that it's going to be, a bit push and pull. The other team, two more quick wickets and they're right back in this. And then within about half an hour, it was done. It was absolutely ridiculous how Bairstow played then. And yeah, it was ridiculous, but also would have been shocked if he played any other way. I mean, he came in with Root, I think in the 60s, nearing his 100, and nearly overtook him by the end of it. And even that was fine. That's how this works now. It's
What was your favourite moment of this test match? Because you and me have sat through the whole thing live. We've seen every ball. What's your favourite takeaway moment from this game?
I think it would have been Stokes's third ball in the first innings. His third ball when he came down, yeah. And when England, so it comes in with England 21 for 4, which is the worst position they were in when they got bowled out for 68 here in 2019. And remember then Stokes played a rubbish shot then and was, lambasted for it. It was strung up and then we saw what happened in the second innings there. This time, by all cricketing logic again, plays a worse shot. And yet the thing is that the assault that had already happened and people, people like say that momentum isn't, it's a thing. It's not a thing. I mean, that people who talk about cricket say, but actually it doesn't really, it's hard to define, doesn't really mean anything. But the momentum had change then, even though England were 55 for 6 somehow, Bolt was at 3 for 30 odd rather than 3 for 8. And that in the way paved the way for what came next, even though England were 21 for 4, Stokes came out and hit 18 off 13 and then got out. That 6 basically summed up everything, I think. That was my favourite moment. Yours?
That's a really good one to pick. It's one of the greatest shots ever played, but not the greatest shot of the match.
Right, yeah.
Which is not my favourite moment, but it's the most ludicrous moment. It was obviously Joe Root's reverse scoop sweep thing, whatever you want to call it, over short third man for six when he was 15 not out and the game's on a knife edge. That Joe Root moment was just, you know, a kind of commonplace freakery, I suppose. If I were to pick one particular moment from the top of my head, yeah, if I could pick one moment, and Bairstow's innings was a moment, right? That was a kind of epoch moment in his career. And incidentally, for me, his first great masterpiece of a test match innings. I thought it was a more complete, a deeper innings than his Trent Bridge mini miracle. But if I could pick one particular moment that encapsulates what's happened in the last few weeks, it was probably Daryl Mitchell against Jack Leach. And Ben Stokes, firstly, I think is an extraordinary on-field captain. I'm no expert on captaincy, but you get enough of a feel when you're watching a game live for how much alertness and how active a cricketer's mind is when they're in charge. And he is gifted at that side of things. There is logic to any funkiness. There is method behind the decisions that it's clearly mapped out. It helps when you have a bowling attack that you can trust. We can get to Matthew Potts in a minute. But everything he did, even when it looked unusual, felt sensible at the time. He got a bit of luck in as much as a bowling change would pay off for him. You know, they took a couple of wickets early on in spells. They took two wickets at the start of resumptions, for example, on day two or three. So he got a little bit of luck, but there was logic behind everything he did. And this is my example. Daryl Mitchell pumps Jack Leach for six. He's 100 and a bit not out. He's obviously batted brilliantly through the series, to say the least. Stokes keeps himself just up enough to tempt him to go for another one. But crucially, Jack Leach, who can be metronomic, and that's not necessarily a compliment, he can be an automaton left-arm spinner when he doesn't feel backed and he doesn't feel confident in himself. And you've sensed throughout his career as an England player that he's been trying to search for that elusive amount of belief that you need so desperately if you're going to survive at this sort of level. He tossed it up. He dared to toss it up. Mitchell, having pumped him down the ground, slightly miscues that shot. And Stokes takes a brilliant catch. Brilliant running catch. He stays on his feet somehow. He's obviously a great athlete. And he took it at kind of wide-ish, deep-ish mid-off. Can't remember if it was his fifth wicket or if it was his fourth, but it and then Stokes hurled the ball into the floor, having taken it. And his joy, the captain's joy in his boy's success, was so palpable and infectious. And it clearly just bleeds throughout the setup, throughout the team. It's easy to have a smile on your face when you're winning games of cricket, but there's something more extravagant at play here, I think. And Jack Leach, who is, you know, a slightly sort of uninspiring cricketer in certain ways, in that he does a slightly unfashionable job and he does it competently, and his kind of utilitarian qualities are his best qualities, so we've seen up to now. But it's amazing what you can do when you can liberate somebody and when you can find the right words at the right time. It can change a person's life. They really can. And that's what's happening to this cricket. What we saw today, in the last few days, is a bowler who is living a little. And that little moment, that little tiny moment in a game of crazy, crazy moments, that will stay with me, I think.
Yeah. And because, yeah, you're right to point out the on-field captaincy and also how that bleeds into backing someone. It's all to say, you know, off the field, say we back you 100%. But if then on the field, you've got your deep point out and your long on out on the boundary and that sort of thing, then that feels different. So that is two things. But it is just remarkable how much Stokes has got belief in so many players who previously looked like they were lacking in Stokes and McCullum. So when you look at like Ollie Pope, say, he didn't really look like he knew what he wanted to be as a test batter up until this series. And then, you know, he cannily sees there's a spot open at number three, text Stokes saying there's a spot there. But then it's Stokes, McCullum have now given him that belief that he can do it, and he looks like he knows how he's going about each innings when he does it, which is different to before. Even if, you know, the technique is sort of similar. There might be a tweak here or there, and he's a similar player. It just looks like that shift has kind of happened. He played really, really well in that fourth innings, which in a way I felt was almost a more more confirming that he had the stuff for number three than the innings in the second test, because that in the second test, it was a very flat pitch. You know, we know that Pope can score those sort of runs on flat pitches. This was a trickier challenge with how Bolt were bowled in that first innings and with, you know, England losing a couple early on, and he broke the back of that chase as much as Root did. So that's another big positive, I think. I'm not yet completely sold that Pope is going to, you know, average 45 at number three from here on out. I feel it could be a little bit more up and down to go, but this was the clearest sign yet, I think, that he can crack that position.
He played very nicely. There are one or two technical kinks still, but I think they can be ironed out. Alistair Cook was very good on him, actually, in his column for the Times over the weekend, where he spoke about this Pope's slightly mixed stance. He hasn't yet eradicated this tendency to be slightly open in the feet, which is fine, but a bit closed in the shoulder, which is less fine. You need to be kind of one or the other, in effect. And at the moment, he's a wee bit twisted in his technique. And you saw that in the first innings, where he got a very good ball from Trent Bolt. But, you know, a number three needs to accept that those kinds of balls are going to be coming down every few overs against good sides. So there's one or two things that he can still address, I think. But he looked very good last night, I thought, against, admittedly, a wilting team. New Zealand looked tired and bedraggled, I thought, by the end of the day. But he's an obvious plus. He came into this series alongside Zach Crawley needing a score. Now, Zach Crawley hasn't got one. He played nicely for 40-odd at Lord's, and that's been that. His dismissal in the second innings here for 25, six fours, of course, was agony. You know, he chipped one, misread the length, chipped one limply to Kane Williamson in the covers or extra cover. However, when Brendan McCullum was asked about him on the TV later this afternoon, just gone, he was pretty unequivocal about it. He likes Zach Crawley. He likes the kind of cricket as Zach Crawley is. And crucially, and wildly again, but we're going to have to get used to it, he said he's not going to be a consistent player.
He's never
going to be a consistent opening batsman. What that means is, what he's saying is, he's still going to win me a game. I still believe, anyway. He still believes that he's going to win him a game. And if he's going to win him a game, one in five, then he's going to pick him. It's going to enrage the Shires. I can already hear it. But we're going to have to get used to it.
Well, it sort of will. And, you know, if you were being churlish, which sometimes I am, you might argue that Zach Crawley is quite a consistent player right now. It sort of will anger people and frustrate people. And it's still taking its... there's still... people can't quite believe that this thing is happening and working. But slowly people are kind of having to just put faith in the gospel of Baz, basically. That, like... The results kind of speak themselves, and how it's playing out speaks for itself. That, you know, if McCullum says Crawley can be a test match opener, increasingly that will be good enough for a lot of people, I think. I think that because of how it's gone so far, because the calls have come off, and I think also people will probably recognise that if anyone could get Crawley to be the player that a lot of people believe Crawley can be, it will be Stokes and McCullum right now, basically. Well, I mean, we'll see what happens. I'm sure that won't be the last time there's some we talk about Zach Crawley.
But... no, but we don't need to talk about Zach Crawley specifically, but the Zach Crawley story and what it says about English cricket. In the press conference that just took place with McCullum, first time he's spoken to the press all since he got the job, since the series began, rather, he said, in answer to a question from Chris Stocks, I think it was, he said, if I'm batting number five for a county team and I'm looking to try and get into the England team and I see what England's number five is doing, then my eyes would be pretty wide open to what to a certain way of playing. And he said, in short, I'd be looking to try and emulate the way that he plays if I'm batting number five for a side in the county championship. So the same can apply to opening batsmen. Right? The same can apply to number sevens. The same can apply to any player in any position now in this new age. And it will be intriguing to see how England's selection process evolves over the next 2 years, say, and whether a conventional stoic opener in the kind of Ben Compton mould, say, whether those players who you can imagine will churn out significant heavy-duty runs and average 45 to 50 opening the batting in England versus a stroke maker, a match winner, who is almost famously inconsistent. It will be very interesting to see how this team leans, but McCullum has already given a pretty clear indication of the kind of cricket he's looking for. If people are saying Dominic Sibley has a really good record, Rory Burns has a really good record, crunch the data, as CricViz have, and Ben Jones was talking about this on our show a few weeks ago. If you look at the data, then those two have a very strong case. I imagine they're probably feeling slightly demoralised by these comments this evening.
Yeah, I guess so. It will really be interesting to see how the sort of the subtleties of the McCullum approach work with that, because I think, you know, obviously Alex Lees was the incumbent. If you were to look, it, like that kind of player you're describing, that Sibley Burns type player, Lees would have been in that mould, you'd have said, ahead of this series. And there's a few different ways to look at positivity. I think you can say it's going out and trying to hit every ball for six, but either Stokes McCullum said before this series that can't expect everyone to go out and play the way that Stokes or McCullum would. And you saw with Lees, okay, didn't have a great test here, but you saw at the in the second test when he played really well, everyone that they were really keen to credit him for playing so well. There was a bit more positive in there, but you know, he wasn't, you know, coming down and trying to like smash Tim Southey over his head third ball. But it's sort of making players believe in their own way of doing things, to have their own backing and belief in that they can make the right decisions. That's a different sort of positivity. But I do fancy that they're just too smart, I think, to think that like the best player is the most attacking player and that all our batters have to play one way. I don't think that's the case. Obviously, they will lean towards preferring that, and they will back players. And if nothing else, it's just a sensible coaching move to say that you back Zach Crawley to the extent that they have, even if you are thinking that, you know, he's got a couple more innings. It's the right thing to say, and then you know, you have to have the tough conversation, and then you handle that when you get to it.
And you're right, and it's a good word that there will be subtleties within this new way. And it's an important point. And us lot in the media, we've got to be careful of reducing it to these kinds of irritating terms. You know, I mean, you kick the show off with Bazball, almost threw the table up in uproar straight away. So we have to be slightly careful, I think, of falling into media speak about this. And you're right. Brendan McCullum's made a 11-hour triple hundred, right? So, you know, he's not a kind of extremist. He's not a one-trick pony who only understands one way. This is a storied international cricketer who's gone round the block 1,000 times, right? He's looked at what he's got and he's made a brave, courageous and slightly wild decision, but one that is rooted in some kind of rationale.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Not to pour cold water or anything, but is there a danger of getting too carried away with how good England are, how much they've improved, how quickly they've improved? Like in some ways, these have been the perfect conditions for, I'll say it one more time, for Bazball. You know, you've got flat pitches, you've got a team who are maybe quite susceptible to being cowed, I suppose, by a period of attacking batting. There are still technical questions over one or two players. The games have still been close. First innings leads within sort of 40 runs each time. How good are England now, do you think?
Ben Stokes played an interesting innings, I thought, on the final afternoon of Trent Bridge that I think might signpost how he will go about it, and it will all flow from him. I think in the fullness of time, once this series settles down, I'd like to focus a bit more on Ben Stokes on the final day at Trent Bridge than Ben Stokes on day two here, when, you know, he skewed one to mid-off and everybody lost their shit. Ben Stokes is a versatile and adaptable cricketer. Ben Stokes was two not out here off 60 balls at the close 3 years ago against Australia and then hit 8 sixes the following day. Ben Stokes is nobody's fool. This is not going to be just one way, this is a freight train with no brakes. It's not going to be that, I don't think. The mistakes will come and the story will have to develop, as you say, some subtleties for sure. I think your point, as you made to me this morning, walking in, or maybe yesterday morning, about the true test will come on if he tracks, I think is a very good one and a very solid one, because we've been discussing the great and the good, and then us, wherever we stand in that equation. I've been discussing technique, English batting technique, for a long time. And you can limit how important that is on flat tracks. But you can't when the going gets really tough and the ball's jagging all over the place. And that 55 for 6 was not a consequence of the new way. It was a consequence of some technical deficiencies in England's top order. That ball went sideways for an hour and Crawley, Pope, Lees didn't know what to do about it. It wasn't because they were trying to do anything funky. It was because technically it wasn't quite working for them. Lees got a jaffa, by the way. Lees was blamed. They all got good balls. They all got good balls. But Alistair Cook did a whole piece on Ollie Pope's. Alex Lees, you know, as I say, got a good ball, but he's at the start of his career and he's still finding his way, as we've seen. Johnny Bairstow as well, who's been obviously extraordinary for a month, but you can't play like that if the ball is jagging all over the place. Or in theory, you can't play like that if the ball's jagging all over the place. You certainly can't play like that all the time. The question will be how cute they can be. How mature, I suppose, can they be during these clutch moments?
Yeah, that's because we haven't mentioned that spell from Trent Bolt. And it was an absolutely brilliant spell. They were all brilliant balls. The thing is that there are lots of brilliant bowlers around at the moment. The next test they play, they'll have Bumrah to face, have Rabada in the series after that, they'll have Shaheen in the series after that. I would say on Bairstow, I kind of think at the moment, he kind of can play that way basically all the time. He is genuinely a struggling thing of a player who has been in as good form as he is in right now.
Like, sure, but he also played three pretty injudicious shots in the first half of the series.
Yeah, that's true.
And needed a score in that fourth innings.
Yeah.
And he got one, to say the least. The issues around England's technical limitations, top order technical limitations, those questions will come around when pitches are a bit spicier. But it's been interesting that all three games, Lords did a bit, but otherwise these have been unusually flat tracks for English cricket, Trent Bridge and here. The pitches, I imagine, will be similar in the second half of the summer, because just as the flatter the pitch in one-day cricket, the better England's one-day chances are. Now, the way that they are playing, you would think that the same would apply.
It's extraordinary because it was it was the exact opposite.
It's been an about turn.
Yeah,
exactly.
Sorry, and I suppose I can't find myself either talking to myself into thinking they're good and talk myself into thinking that they might struggle and that's fine. But the flip side is that actually for a test team like England's to become actually very competitive, it often doesn't take much more than a couple of pieces here and there. Like test teams can actually, they can carry one or two misfiring players. It's when that's three or four that's when a team really struggles to put up scores. But Root, being as brilliant as he is, if he has Bairstow especially around him who is playing that well, And then also a couple of other guys who are in decent form, like Pope's clearly in good form. Stokes is going to, you know, come off probably more than he fails at the moment. And Folks is also is looking more like he belongs as a test cricketer. Like a batting lineup that has two very, very strong players in form and a few others who can contribute here and there. It's much more than what England have had before. We're not at all saying England are the best side in the world. On this test itself, I spoke to Mark Butcher about the key performers from an England point of view. Butch, last week, Johnny Bairstow hit one of England's great test hundreds. This week, he played innings that was arguably even better. And coming into this year, he'd gone, 3 years without passing 60 in test cricket. It's been an incredible transformation. What's happened?
Yeah, it's extraordinary, isn't it? I suppose you go back to the innings at Sydney, where, funnily enough, he looked unbelievably scratchy until he broke his thumb. And then, the pain of that and the urgency with which he then felt he had to play sort of unshackled him, and he played in much more of a free fashion, taking down Nathan Lyon, etc., if I remember rightly. And then he then goes and makes a superb century in the West Indies on that trip. So, the form continued. I don't think he played particularly well in that last Test match. He would have been disappointed, as the rest of the batting lineup was, when England went down in Grenada. I mean, rather got talked out a little bit by the wicketkeeper. And then you come into this series here, and there was a lot of talk about a lot of the players who have ended up in this team for England, Johnny Bairstow being one of them. About perhaps whether or not at five Harry Brook might have fancied, been a better bet in that position, etc., etc. Now, Johnny's come out and played, as you rightly say, the most extraordinary innings at Trent Bridge to win in the game, very much in sort of one-day beast mode. The innings here at Headingley was better. I mean, 55 for 6, England absolutely in trouble, Trent Bolt making the ball talk. What's changed? Well, defensively, he's a damn sight better, surer. And whether that's a change of mindset, I think he's probably just opened up his stumps a little bit more. I think, he was another one who got a bit preoccupied with standing in front of off stump. That doesn't seem to be the case anymore. So defensively, he was superb. The mindset was always, be as attacking as you possibly can, throw some punches back at the bowlers. And it was an innings of rare quality. It was so, so good. That now any thought that he might be one of the people whose head is on the block is completely gone. He's also loving the idea of being one of the senior players in the team. I think he's being treated with a lot more respect. He's been given a lot more responsibility. He knows that he's backed 100%, and anybody who knows anything about Johnny knows that he's a sensitive soul for all manner of reasons. And just wants to kind of be accepted and loved, even after the innings on the Friday. He the first thing he said to us when he came down to talk to us down on pitch side was, I'm not everyone's cup of tea. And we're like, Johnny, everybody loves you. Yeah. You're all right. You'll do for us. He kind of has this idea that, that he's too different, or that people don't take to him. They do.
Yeah. And I think you saw with the reaction to that 100 here, I mean, if it's his home ground, the England fans especially really, really love him. Like, he is a proper fan favourite. And the only issue is that he's running out of people and things to prove wrong, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. But, that's quite a good thing. To be able to go out there and take on Test match batting in its own terms, it doesn't have to be the case that he's trying to prove people wrong or prove that he deserves his place in the side. I've thought forever, that when the battle was raging over whether he should keep wicket, whether it should be Joss, whether Ben Folk, whether Johnny should have stayed at seven and been a bat. I've always believed that Johnny Bairstow is one of the three best batters in the country. And England have gone through a long period of time whereby the top five or six has been so unproductive that it always seemed mad to me that somebody as good as Johnny was batting as low as seven. And they seem to have come to it, that still might end up happening, I suppose. You saw a sort of glimpse of what might happen if England did want to get Harry Brook into the side. But if I were Johnny now, I'd be like, you ain't moving me from five now. You're not moving me from here now. This is my gig. And I think England will be much the better served for that.
Yeah, I suppose the issue you have for the next test is that they will hope Folks will be fit. Obviously, he's tested positive for COVID during this game. But if he's not, they'll either face a question of saying to Bairstow, you're not going to keep, we're going to bring someone else in to keep when we know how good a keeper he is, or saying we're going to move from five where you've done so well And either of those things kind of has a, it removes that kind of that sort of bubble of serenity that's around him a little bit, I guess. So hopefully folks is fit and we don't have to, doesn't have to become an issue.
But. Yeah, hopefully. You know, the fact that he had to leave the ground, I mean, he had to leave the ground to get away from everybody else. He didn't infect anybody else. But, you know, I had COVID before the Lord's Test match and I'm probably not quite as fit as Ben Folks. I know you find that hard to believe. and it took me, what, it was nine or 10 days before I got a negative test. So that might be the case. Obviously, Sam Billings has come up to take over. Johnny could have stayed at the wicketkeeper, and I suppose they had to replace Ben Folks with a like for like, didn't they? So it will be very interesting to see what happens. But I, for one, I really hope that he doesn't get the gloves back. And I really hope that he stays at number five. Because, you know, I think one of the things that will have come to him over the last, particularly over the last couple of weeks, is, hang on, batting at number five, I'm batting with proper players here. I've got the chance to make double hundreds. I've got the chance to average 50 in Test match cricket. And I think he's good enough to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Another player who's had a remarkable revival, really, or return, I suppose, is Jack Leach. He hadn't played a home Test for 2 years before this series, and obviously has that awful start where he gets concussion. There was a bit of criticism about whether he could be incisive as well as controlling, whether he was bowling too defensively, and then he takes 10 wickets in the game. It seems like Ben Stokes really trusts him. That was the main thing I took away from the first innings before anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he'd always been used as the, excuse the black adderism, but the last turkey in the shot by Joe Root. You know, it was almost like, we've run out of other options, or go on, you might as well have a go. And so, you know, coming on in the 13th over, getting a wicket with his very first ball. I mean, I've been watching Jack Leach very closely for the last 2 years or so, I suppose, and have been sort of constantly in touch with, or just having conversations with Jeetan Patel about, you know, he's asking me, how do you think he's going? I'm saying, well, you know, he's lacking a little bit here. He needs to develop a little bit more overspin. He needs to be able to get the ball to drift more. He needs to be able to deceive batsmen in the air on pitches that aren't ragging square. And up until this game, I just didn't think he was going to be capable of doing it. I know he's been working on it. I know that he and Jeetan Patel have been working very, very hard on his ball release and getting a bit more energy on the ball, regardless of whether the ball is ragging or not. And then it all fell into place. You know, so you've got a combination of being, again, being valued, being given that confidence that Ben Stokes rates you and thinks that you're the best and wants you in the game. And then you have the beautiful, you know, coincidence of that arriving when the changes and the improvements that he's trying to make have finally clicked and come together. And in that, you know, you end up taking a 10 for him, and he bowled really bloody well.
Yeah.
In the first innings, perhaps there was an element of fortune in it, and that was as much on Ben Stokes and his sort of tactical nous, his willingness to kind of not throw everyone back on the boundary. You know, tease and tempt batters into making mistakes, which, again, first innings, that's the way you're going to get people out. Second innings, that's when the spinner himself has to do the work. And the thing that will probably please him the most is he ended up picking up left-handers as well. I thought he bowled really well against the lefties, which I don't think words that have never come out of my lips before.
Yeah, I think one thing we discussed before with Leach is that you can talk about what sort of bowler he is and if he is too defensive, but I think that does miss that he has been through a lot, which has kind of almost forced him to change and forced him out of form. If you think back to 2019, in that summer, he bowled really well in that series against Australia as well. Yeah. And I don't think he'd bowled, even when he was obviously on turning pitches are slightly different, but in pitches that weren't offering him extreme assistance, he hadn't bowled that well as he did in that series since then. There are lots of reasons for that. And this was the closest to that I can remember, I think.
I think you're right. And, you know, there were rough patches there for him to aim at. He hit them regularly. I mean, you know, in the winter in the West Indies, he very rarely did. You know, that's another slight technical tweak whereby, you know, I'd been on commentary talking about just how high his bowling arm was, which kind of got reverse drift. You know, the ball was moving through the air in the same direction that the ball was eventually going to turn, meaning that you'd struggle to hit the rough. And you'd struggle to create the angles that get good players out. That, again, wasn't the case. Second innings, he bowled so well to the left-handers. There was lovely breeze blowing across the ground, so he was able to get the ball to drift out, hit the rough, turn back in. Some went on straight. You know, it was really good stuff.
The other bowler to impress significantly, I think, was Matt Potts, who's England's leading wicket taker of the series. And I think even though he has got a lot of praise, I think it's still gone slightly under the radar just how impressive that achievement is. Like, he's 23, he's playing his first series, he's already bowled absolutely loads this summer, he's against the world champions. England have barely won a test for, you know, a year, and he just looked absolutely completely at home.
Yeah, he seems to be indefatigable, which, you know, Steve Harmison told me that that was one of his great attributes, was that he's as good last ball of the day as he is first. He hits the bat really hard. Now, the speed gun doesn't sort of get up above 85 miles an hour very often, but he whacks the top of the stickers, you know, from a good length. So batters are getting caught half and half and not sure whether to go forward and back. He also has the ability to move it both ways. He bowled brilliantly against the left hand. His record against left handers is twice as bad as it is against the righties. However, in this test match, he's picked up on, you know, some of the advice probably that he's getting from Broadie about round the wicket. He's been able to kind of get the ball to leave the left-handers from around the wicket to them. Again, really impressive. And the other thing that you can't help but notice is he's very, very comfortable setting his own field, telling the captain what he wants. And it's something that you love to see in bowlers for two reasons. One, obviously, got the confidence, he feels like he belongs in the team already after three test matches, and secondly, it means he knows what he's doing, he knows where he's going to bowl the ball. If he's moving extra men from, you know, from offside to leg side or leg side to offside or putting another slip in, he then backs it up with the delivery that says, you know, I wanted him there because this is what I was going to do next, you know. And that's really impressive for a young guy.
Yeah, and at one point on that third evening, he was bowling without a fine leg in, which I can't think I've seen very many fast bowlers do. And it shows, firstly, the confidence that Stokes has in him to say you can do that, the accuracy that he has. And also, as a captain, that just gives you, it's an extra fielder, which is absolutely massive. You can, you know, you're not having to sacrifice something else if you know he's not going to get hit off his pads, basically.
Yeah, try doing that when England bat. They'll just be scooping it down there, won't they? He's been really impressive. And, you know, again, didn't seem to break a sweat doing it either. You know, I just sort of remember, that, again, was talking on commentary about just how uncomfortable he makes batters out there. And kind of the very next ball, he whacks his ball into a length. And Blundell, who's on 60 or 70 at the time, sort of defends it, fends it off. It hits the inside of the stickers. He then rings his bottom hand as though, you know, the thing has hit the top of the bat so hard that it's jarred. You know, between his thumb and forefinger, and yeah, it's really great. Another guy who's got energy and menace on the ball. It always feels as though something's going to happen, even when in those periods of time where the pitch has got flat.
Yeah, let's go back to the key session of the test, which was that second evening, England 90 for 6 at tee. Sort of, you know, you think this is the time that Baz ball sort of comes unstuck in a way. We've obviously talked about Bairstow, who played brilliantly, but Joe Overton was almost just as good in that session, wasn't he? And for a guy to that. In that situation, with Trent Boult bowling as well as he was, it says a lot about him and a lot about the fact that England have created that environment that allows a guy on debut to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've not seen Jamie Overton bat in long-form cricket. I've seen him slog it out the ground in T20 games. And so, you know, that you kind of imagine that that's what he is. You know, he's going to come out and have a proper swing. But, you know, in the end, we ended up doing sort of an analysis piece showing how much better he played the swinging ball from Trent Boult than poor old Zach Crawley did, you know. So, in defence, he looked very, very solid. And then when the boulder started to roll down the hill and pick up and gather momentum, he then started to bash it out the park as well. And you almost felt sorry for New Zealand at the time because the crowd were up. England just kept hitting it for 4 and 6, and it just kind of felt like there was nothing that was going to stop that momentum. A truly remarkable partnership. Was it 200, wasn't it, for the seventh wicket? Yeah. Just extraordinary. I mean, we've seen over the course of the last 10 days or so, two of the best days Test match cricket I think I can ever remember watching. You know, why? And they've both happened in the same series. To a team or it's been done by a team who hadn't won a test match in 17 before. This is unbelievable.
Yeah, we should just talk quickly about Overton's bowling, I guess, because that's what he's in the team for mostly. He reached 90 miles an hour. He wasn't consistently up there, but he did get there. He was mostly asked to bowl and bowling quite short, which is interesting, and it's how England tend to use their quicker bowlers.
Yes.
Is it the right thing to do, do you think?
I think, and this is certainly not a criticism, because Ben has got most things right as a captain tactically. He's been very, very sharp. But I do think that sometimes you can over-egg that, particularly you get, you know, in the partnership with Blundell and Mitchell. You know, I think it's a great idea. You do it for a couple of overs and then you settle back in to you know, Overton had the ability in the first innings to swing the ball in and out. And I think even during that second innings there, when England were going predominantly short, when he did pitch it up, the ball moved. You know, he was able to get the ball to sort of challenge the stumps with a bit of inward movement. So, you know, the thing with doing that is that it hurts the body. We've seen what it's done to Mark Wood. It's kind of broken Jofra Archer. You know, there are lots of broken Ben Stokes. It broke him in the winter as well in Australia. It takes a lot out of bowlers to be asked to do that all the time. And so, you know, I think it's a legitimate tactic. Genuinely, there are times when it's absolutely necessary. But I do think that you can overdo it.
Yeah, and can I just ask about that? With, you say it takes more out of the body. I think for people who haven't played a lot of cricket and who haven't bowled fast, which is most people, can't get up to that speed, why does it affect the body more? Because, you know, you're bowling the same speed. It's not as if bounces are quicker than others. You're just letting it go a bit later, aren't you?
You are letting it go later, but you really do. I mean, if you challenge you to watch or maybe go outside and listen, and the force with which the left foot hits the ground when you're trying to slam it into the deck is just harder, you know. You're jackknifing the body in half, and you're really trying to whack the ball into the surface. And of course, if you're bowling good bouncers, they're not that short, you know. So you're really trying to generate energy from a length that it isn't by your toes, you know. Yeah. And that's why it hurt. Bowling Yorkers, bowling bouncers are the two things that stress the body the most.
Right. Well, cheers, Butch. And speak to your edge person, I guess.
That you will.
Right. And that, we're now joined by New Zealand Herald's Andrew Alderson to get the Kiwi perspective on what the reaction will be like back home, perhaps the bittersweet McCullum success and all that. Obviously in England, everyone's getting very excited about that, you know, we can win a cricket match again and that sort of thing. But I think this has been a bad series from New Zealand perspective. Matt Carter has asked if we're actually underplaying how bad New Zealand have been. Do you think, how disappointed will they be? What will the reaction be like back home?
Look, I think New Zealand have been in a contest. I've got to be honest. I really feel like, you know, get a couple of games going to the fifth day. It was pretty level at Lord's across those first two innings, and then we've just seen that brilliant batting from England in the fourth innings, and New Zealand probably not maximising their firepower, if you like, to be able to get those 20 wickets. I mean, chases of your consecutive chases, 277, 299, 296 have been extraordinary watches. I mean, I mean, as a neutral fan, they're just amazing, just seeing what Bairstow and Root and Stokes and the like have been able to achieve. And I think it's just part of, I think Brendan McCullum probably noted it in his chat to the media, just saying that it's a case of, you know, unlocking what's there, really, and just taking it from that point of view. But yeah, I think New Zealand, they're an ageing team, though. They're probably another year on from the World Championship victory, and there's not a lot of younger players coming through. You've sort of got this bell curve of people who are, I guess, from 29 to 32, and then a few just outside that. I think Jameson, the youngest, 27, Wagner, oldest, at 36. So it's a group that's worked a lot together, but yeah, it's just about probably the development thing from here on in.
That's interesting, because I reckon if it were England right now, there would be calls for wholesale change, everyone to be sacked. I mean, because if you look at after the World Championship final, they lost in India, okay, that happens, but then lose a test at home to Bangladesh, don't beat South Africa, and you've got a good chance to beat them. But is it kind of seen that this is just a team in slight transition with Ross Taylor going out, Kane Williamson understandably out of form with the elbow thing? Are people going to be pretty sort of sanguine about it?
BJ Watling as well, yeah. Another key component in that side over a number of years. You've got to have the players to replace them, and they've got some fine players, Red Bull cricket. I mean, it'll be probably close watch on the Plunkett Shield, the four-day competition in New Zealand in the next 12 months to 24 months as well, just keep bringing those players through. But I still feel like those are the best players that New Zealand has to offer for the most part. I mean, if you look at that series, I think, again, McCullum noted it, and here I am talking about McCullum noting good points, which is ominous in itself from a New Zealand perspective. But just saying that just the top four were one of the key weaknesses. And that's true, I think. Just they didn't get enough runs relative to what England were able to achieve. I think
also relative to their talents, yep, as well. And this does happen sometimes. We've got literally one of the all-time greats batting at three, didn't make a 50, albeit only in two test matches. Devon Conway at number four is a mini genius, as far as I'm concerned. I think he's an amazing cricketer, and looked good in parts. Didn't get a score. You know, gave it away at Trent Bridge in a key moment for that, batting beautifully for 50 odd. Henry Nicholls, fine Test match player, couldn't get a run. Tom Latham made one score all series. Now these are good cricketers, but sometimes cricket's weird, isn't it? And it just collectively drags a batting lineup into itself, and it felt like this was happening here.
That's right. They just, and I think good bowling as well. Again, I mean, look at a player. You know, you speak about bringing new players in. Potts. I thought he was one of the standouts of the series, and I know that the kudos has gone to Bairstow and Root and even Leach today with the man of the match scenario. But Potts just consistently. That's a great example of someone developed on the county circuit and being brought into this lineup, and the fact that he got Williamson three times. I think Williamson was caught behind the wicket four times, but Potts had him three of those. Was an indication that he was up to the task. So,
do you think that when the dust settles, Kane Williamson will think, "I still want to carry on. This is my team. I've done great things with it. My elbow is manageable. I still want to be the captain of this team." Or do you think there might be a natural evolution in that question?
Again, you've got to have someone to replace him. I know that Tom Latham's been suggested, and he's an admirable captain when he fills in for Williamson. I still think Williamson's the best player to keep captaining that team at the present time. I mean, he's captained a team to the inaugural World Championship 12 months ago, and has struggled with his fitness since then, which that could be a telling point of his, but the fitness is not necessarily going to affect his captaincy. It's more just the longevity in the game, full stop, with this elbow problem, if it's ongoing. I mean, he's got it under control at the moment, and whether or not that ultimately affects his status in the game.
I've been working with Jeremy Coney and Craig McMillan, and they've observed the conservatism that, say, is a part of the characteristic of this team. It suddenly becomes very stark next to what the other lot are doing. Now, the other lot are extreme, and they're in some kind of Kool-Aid experiment, you know. But do you think that that style of cricket, that attritional style of cricket, that conservative with a small C style of cricket, do you think that that may need to be shaken up as the game evolves? And do you think,
do need to make adjustments. I'm not sure it's wholesale adjustments, but I think that they would need to perhaps be more innovative. I mean, the case in point here, and Steadman Williamson effectively alluding to this at the end of the game today, is, you know, playing Michael Bracewell instead of Ajaz Patel. I mean, they haven't said it explicitly, but, you know, a specialist spinner out there in Patel, who instead has said is still the number one spinner, and Williamson feels likewise, I think, is just, it just seems to me that that's an opportunity missed, that Patel, in, you know, only bowled two overs in the series, only bowled two overs since taking the third 10 for in Test cricket history in an innings, is an opportunity missed. And New Zealand don't want to get into that habit either of being a side that relies on just the four quicks at home in their own conditions. You want to be able to do it around the world, which they have done over the last, I guess, since 2013, McCullum turned the corner for them.
And I think you get this actually with almost, maybe it's tying too much between Root and Williamson, but when you have batters that are so good, especially at playing spin as those two are, I think they can look at a spinner and they know how they would play them. And they think, well, you know, this guy can't really do much here. I know that I would be able to face this here. When actually, you say, Ajaz Patel is a very good spinner. You know, he won New Zealand the test here last year, which won them the series. So that would be a question about Williamson, is that handling off spin in particular as a captain.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that's, sometimes when players who are good at something see someone out, you know, even with pace as well, they don't necessarily take on board just how effective and potent that player is. So
by that token, Williamson wouldn't pick any bowlers.
That's right. Exactly. He might pick Potts.
Yeah.
So I think that's an opportunity missed there on this.
Massively.
I mean, and the trouble is it's accentuated and exaggerated, if you like, by the fact that Jack Leach has taken 10 for 166 and been such a key component in the game.
Just briefly, the three great quicks, none of them are young. You mentioned Kyle Jameson, who will probably end up being the attack leader, but are there any coming through? Should you be concerned that the cupboard is a bit bare in the pace?
I think that is a potential weakness. I mean, they'll develop players through white ball, but they do need to start getting some younger quicks into the, and I guess looking at the Plunkett Shield a bit more closely in that regard to bring players through. Again, they have to be better than in Southey and Bolt. You've had New Zealand's best new ball combination in its history. Yeah. And obviously Hadley aside, with Hadley being Hadley, but and then you add Wagner to that mix. I mean, even Henry. I mean, Henry, his selection can be justified in that he was the player of the series against South Africa.
And he did really well here last year.
And he's done well here. So that's you know, just didn't really fulfil the brief at Trent Bridge, but you know, has certainly performed here in the past. So it's just about finding. I would say they're still the best. Other than if you could have had, say, a Ferguson just for that lightning pace. But they're not considering Ferguson because he hasn't played Red Bull for over 2 years.
But that's another issue, right?
Yeah.
As well, persuading quicks when they can potentially earn a very, very tidy living.
Which I'm sure Ferguson is.
Indeed, and, yeah.
It's just indeed. About, I mean, it'd be a bit of a travesty, though, if Lachie Ferguson finishes his career, I think, 11 overs in Perth, and that's it.
We should finish by, I think, discussing Daryl Mitchell and Tom Lunnell, who I don't think we mentioned. Because you say that top four, top five, out of form, but we know they're good. And actually, when you talk about replacing Ross Taylor, Mitchell kind of looks like maybe he could be that guy. When you talk about replacing Watling, Blundell, I think only McCullum and Watling have more hundreds for New Zealand among Test wicket keepers.
Well, I think New Zealand's been fairly lucky to have them both. But then that's guys fulfilling a brief, isn't it? And yeah, going in there, I mean, Mitchell just has a bit. I've sort of referred to it as the, you know, the gladiator and the matador. I just love the way that Mitchell is just fearless. Just goes for it. Is prepared to, you know, take a bowler off his length and really not let anyone get on top of him. Blundell is a different player. He's darting around the crease. He's wristy. He works the ball well. And I just thought they made a great combination, as we saw with, you know, so many runs and partnership over the series. And you're right, they fulfilled those briefs well. And that's where, again, it's just that top four just didn't go on enough. Just take that shine even more off the ball, if you like, at the start. And we were relying on Mitchell and Blundell to do the job in so much depth.
Mitchell's personal series will go down in legend. Statistically, it's extraordinary. It's off the charts.
Well, it's Bradman-esque, isn't it? I mean, yeah, only guy to score 303 consecutive tests to start a series.
Indeed. I think it's the highest three-match aggregate since Gooch in 1990 in England, at least.
And the highest for an overseas player.
Yeah.
So it's a real scroll there, isn't it?
and he's been whitewashed. It's absolutely brutal.
I know.
This game is terrible.
That's why we love it, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just individuals in a team game, and you see that. There's no greater example than Daryl Mitchell.
Well, on behalf of English cricket, thanks for sticking two Kiwis at the top of our cricket and turning it into the only ticket in town.
Thank you very much. That's right. My pleasure.
Gulliver's is the leading tour operator in specialist sports travel, with 40 plus years experience taking fans all over the world to bucket list events and once in a lifetime destinations. With the Men's T20 World Cup taking place in Australia across October and November, Gulliver's Sports Travel is the official travel agent. Join them on a trip of a lifetime to experience T20 cricket of the highest calibre. Watch England take on Australia, New Zealand, Afghanistan and others in the shortest and most electrifying format of the international game. I think Brendan McCullum has something to say about that. Head to gullivers-travel.co.uk to find out more. So this series is done, but India are already in the country. They had a bit of a silly warm-up game against Leicestershire, but really mostly against themselves. I guess there are two questions for England. They've announced a squad which has Sam Billings in it. What do they do if folks doesn't recover from COVID? And who does James Anderson come back for? Phil, which way do you see them going on those two?
It needn't be necessarily a like-for-like with the keeper, because Bairstow could potentially take the gloves. I think they will go with Billings, though, on that. I would imagine that they wouldn't want to upset what's working very nicely indeed in the Bairstow story. As for who replaces, who makes way for James Anderson, well, Matthew Potts has played three games in a row. Matthew Potts is the biggest find of this series.
And he's bowled absolutely loads of them. Matt Roller put a stat up on Twitter.
He's bowled a lot.
Yeah, but 30% more than any other seamer in the country.
Yeah, so he may well be the one to make way. It's remarkably harsh, but if you speak to any county cricketer who treads the boards and their seamers, they are knackered if they're constantly bowling. And this will be four test matches with all the emotional nervous energy as well that goes into it. Four test matches in 5 weeks for him, just at the start of his career. it's not based on ability. Clearly not. Clearly he's a superior bowler and a more likely bowler at test level, say, than Jamie Overton is at the moment. But considering what he's gone through, it's possible that he would make way and Anderson would retake the new ball. And obviously Overton has made runs, so he can offer something at number eight. So that would be a possibility and maybe a probability. But then I guess, now I think about it, he will have a break after this. He's not going to be involved in the one-day side, so he'll have a break after that test match until the start of the South Africa series, which it doesn't kick off until early August. So possibly, if he does come up fine after this game, they will think, we go with you, in which case it probably becomes Overton.
Yeah, I guess, because I think with Potts, it depends if it's either, there's two different reasons why he'd rest a player. One is injury prevention, which would be fair enough in the case of Matt Potts. The other would be because you think they are too tired to keep bowling as well as they have been, which I don't think is an issue with him. You look at how he
just comes at you exactly. All day long, doesn't he?
Yeah. So and this also, this India test, this is the test of the summer. You know, like this is the visit of you know, not Rohit Sharma's India, perhaps, as we'll talk about in a bit, but of India. This is to decide the series. This is the showpiece game, and he will have that break. So if he's feeling a bit tired, he'll be able to summon that extra 10% because they have that break. So I think they will pick what they see as their best attack from the available seamers.
In which case Potts should play.
Yeah.
Play.
But then I suppose the wrinkle is that, you know, you saw the benefit of having batting at number eight.
Yep.
With Jamie Overton's innings here. But Cullum doesn't seem like the sort even to pick a bowler based on their batting, you know.
No, he doesn't. But it is useful if someone can strum 90-odd on debut. Stuart Broad was a different bowler in the second innings to that which he was in the first. I thought in the first innings he was fabulous, really fabulous. And he tired clearly in the second innings. That said, he's a big match player, and that was evident throughout this game. You know, he got the crowd going at various points. He's just having a baby, isn't he? It was his birthday this week, and he's loving it. As Ben Stokes acknowledged in the press conference tonight, you know, he texted him at the start of this series, and he said he's effing buzzing for it. So my guess, all things considered, is it might be Overton to make way. But we shall see. It's a good place to be, really, because Jimmy Anderson is fit, ready to go, and wants to play for another 10 years. He was literally saying that in the hotel bar last night. So, yeah, we shall see. But I have a feeling about this game, by the way, that if the weather stays good, it's going to be a classic. I think sometimes one-off games like this, they have the potential to be memorable in and of themselves. You know, I know it's part of a series, but that's a bit spurious now, I think, really, and it's not really about Test Championship points. It feels a bit like an exhibition game, and I can see it being a classic, an absolute humdinger.
Mm. Well, the big news from the India camp is that Rohit Sharma has tested positive for COVID-19 and faces a race against time to be fit for the Edgbaston test. He might recover in time. He will be able to leave self-isolation if he's fully recovered, but you know, it's a tricky old virus, this one, that could go either way. If he doesn't recover, India have KS Barrett in the squad as a backup opener. He hit 70-odd in the warm-up game. They've also called up Mayank Agarwal as backup, who we'll know a lot about, and they could promote Cheshwar Pujara or Hanuma Vihari if they needed to. And then on the captaincy question, that is quite a tricky one because there's no Kara Hall either, who's injured.
Really? So it might go back?
Well, I mean, they kind of have three options. So Rishabh Pant captained in T20Is, but I think there are sort of doubts over his captaincy skill, I guess. Jasprit Bumrah was vice-captain for a series against Sri Lanka, I think, earlier this year. So I think he'd probably
be the third one.
But there is also Virat Kohli,
who
has a bit of experience in captaincy.
It's not going
to
be
here and there. But yes, I sort of doubt that that would be the case. But that's the big fear for India.
You imagine asking him.
Yeah.
Now, Virat, sit yourself down and let's go through this. No chance.
Rishabh Pant captaining Virat Kohli. It'd be a wonderful thing to see.
Rishabh Pant will get it, I would imagine.
Do you think? I think they would go Bumrah, I think.
Okay.
And on that India series, we will be going daily. Yaz is going to be up in Edgbaston for plenty of it. And if he's not there, we'll be doing daily podcasts. So make sure you watch out for those on your podcast service of your choice and on YouTube, etc. It
starts Friday.
It does. It starts on Friday.
The day after the end of
the women's test. Yeah, we've got the 13 days of continuous test cricket. And yeah, so England have begun that game down at Taunton against Africa. They've got four debutantes: Emma Lamb, Alice Davidson-Richards, Lauren Bell and Dizzy Wong. They started well with the ball, but Marizan Kapp is currently playing literally one of the great innings. She's 150 out as we speak, which is
out of 276 for eight.
Yeah, when we started recording it, she'd just got to 100, and so she's clearly teed off, and we've been talking for probably far too long.
Still, the weather holds, it's going to be a good game.
That actually could now be another proper classic. But we don't have a huge amount of time to spend talking about that game, but Yaz is down at the test, and we will have a full review of it when it's done. And one big bit of news away from the test game is that Owen Morgan, it seems, is set to step down as England captain.
I don't think you need any caveats.
Yeah. Okay.
I think we're fine.
We were discussing earlier that it'd be great if he, you know, like Anderson's done in the past, and like Cook has done, if he just comes out and does a "I'm not going anywhere." But it seems unlikely.
Jordan Belfort style.
It's tricky to know for me what to actually say at this point in time. I mean, we absolutely know what Owen Morgan's legacy is. I think we know who's going to take over Joss Butler, with a few people saying that it should be Moeen Ali. And we know he's going to come in for him. It's Liam Limpson. We kind of know that it's the right time, I think.
It's an odd one, because on the one hand it feels seismic, on the other hand it feels absolutely necessary, and it's been long mooted as well. All I can add to it really is that it's a final classy move from an ever classy cricketer. Timing is everything. He was absolutely the right place in the right time for when he came into the England side. I mean, he changed the way that England batted in one day cricket. There was undoubted streaks of genius in him when he was in his 20s. I'll never forget that 100 he made against Australia in 80 balls at the Rose Bowl, as it was called then, which I was at for, and it's one of the great innings I've ever seen. He changed the game on the pitch, changed the game off the pitch, and now, as his powers have weakened, he's absolutely taken the right call at the right time. Fair play to him, really fair play to him. Moeen Ali, I spoke to earlier today, he has played under Morgan and been profoundly influenced by the Morgan era, and he was brilliant on him. It's interesting that we're chatting today with the news that Owen Morgan is relinquishing the captaincy. He retires, a legend of English cricket. His legacy is endless.
Yeah.
That comment in 2019 echoes through the last few years, that comment about Adil.
Yeah.
And that open-mindedness and open-heartedness was quietly quite revolutionary, I think, in the English game. Yeah. You played under him. You were obviously a part of his great, great white ball team. And that was a conscious thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was a conscious expression of the team's philosophy.
Yeah. And it's almost come to a stage where anybody is accepted, no matter what.
Yeah.
Everybody is accepted.
Yeah.
Whether you are somebody of faith, if you're homosexual, whatever it is, you are accepted in this team, in this environment.
Mm.
And Owen Morgan has really been the pioneer of that. He actually has pushed it. He doesn't care what you look like, where you're from, what you've done, in terms of, like, he doesn't ever hold it against anybody. There's no difference between people.
Yeah.
And Owen Morgan as captain on the field is an amazing captain, like tactically, all that kind of stuff. But off the field, he's the best I've ever seen or I've ever been with, because the way he has to manage the team, the environment, and then on top of that be so outwardly spoken about the good things in life and how things should be and his rights and all that kind of stuff. He's amazing and truly will be missed, not just on the field as a captain, off the field more than anything, because he's a great person, and whatever he decides to do next, he'll be amazing at it.
Yeah, no doubt. Going back to that, the idea of this philosophy that again permeates now into the new test match setup as well, took a lot of guts, because if there is one characteristic of modern discourse, modern life, it is that we are more polarised than ever, it feels at times. And so to put yourself right in the guts of that argument, that took a lot of courage. Right?
Yeah.
A lot of moral courage.
Yeah, 100%. And to then fight for that, he had a lot on his plate. When he took over as captain, he had a lot on his plate. The coaches, the
ECB, I think, were struggling with certain things, the coaches were struggling, the director of cricket was going, all that, there was so much going on. And he was firm, direct, he knew what he wanted. He had a vision, and for me that's really important, because he knew what he wanted. He knew what type of players he wanted in the team, what characters he wanted in the side.
Mm.
He's very loyal.
Mm.
And then to have all that going on, and then, like you say, almost get right in the thick of things, and really get his hands dirty almost to really do that change and have that change. And now you look at it, like we mentioned earlier, it's normal now. Like, it's so people are so welcome. They come inside, they feel like they've been in the team for years and years, and that environment he's created, and not just that, the cricket side of things, he was the first one really to come out. Obviously, we wanted to play the more aggressive brand of cricket, like Stokesy, actually.
Well, thanks very much for listening. I've been Ben Gardner. Thanks, Phil, for joining.
I remain Phil Walker.
Yeah, and thanks to those who who have already departed. And if you did enjoy listening, please give us a nice, maybe a 5-star review on the app of your choice. Cheers.
Podcast Network.